The Curve Crew are back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Shortly after 10:30 in the morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg with you, producer Rory working his magic behind the board. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Dave Jamieson. Dave is the host of The Dave Jamieson Show on TSN 1260 in Edmonton, our sister station. Dave, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Good to chat with you again, guys.
Likewise, Dave. Obviously brought you on. A lot of news coming out of oil land earlier this week. Let's start, before we get to Milan Lucic and the big contract signing, let's start with going back to Wednesday and the Taylor Hall trade to New Jersey for Adam Larson. I'm not sure about you, Dave, but I know that when, you know, that trade was breaking over Twitter, and at first it was just, you know, Hall for Larson, I just kept sitting there waiting for another piece. What's going to be the second piece coming over from New Jersey to Edmonton? And when it never materialized and when it became official that it was just a one-for-one deal, I could only sort of shake my head and wonder at what Peter Chiarelli's doing.
Well, then you were not unlike a lot of people who were listening to my show and listening to our station here in Edmonton, because there was a sort of a childlike innocence. You know, it was like Christmas morning. You mean that those were all the gifts I got? Yep, Larson is the only gift you got. And people were, you know, the vast majority of them were livid with Peter Chiarelli. They were very upset that the Oilers, because Taylor Hall, and rightly so, is deemed as one of the best wingers, left wingers, in the National Hockey League. He is, despite the failings of the Oilers during his time here, has been good, if not excellent, almost all of that time, and he's coming off his best season. So the perception was he will have maximum market value, and that in Edmonton means a right-hand shot defenseman who can run the power play, eat up 22 to 25 minutes a night. That's what they wanted to see back. When they didn't get that, they saw the trade as a failure.
Dave, we know that Oilers GM Peter Chiarelli has been trying to acquire a defenseman for quite some time now. From what you've been able to discover, how close were the Oilers to getting P.K. Subban? How close were they to getting another defenseman, say a Kevin Shattenkirk or any other defenseman that was on the trade market?
Well, look, I think, you know, any of us, other than, you know, maybe a few insiders and people far closer to the team than I am, might be able to get a sense of how close they got. Chiarelli isn't going to say, oh, by the way, we got Larson and we were this close to Shattenkirk, or we were this close to Travis Hamonic, a guy who a lot of Oiler fans, going back to when Travis Hamonic, you know, had submitted the trade request because he needed to be closer to family in Manitoba, of course, Oiler fans thought, well, I mean, you know, why wouldn't he want to come to Edmonton? All of that said, you know, Chiarelli, will take him at his word for now until we hear otherwise, that he was diligent, he was thorough in turning over, you know, every rock possible to, and landed on Adam Larson, a guy who he thinks very highly of, although he did say, look, he's not a sexy defenseman. No, he certainly isn't, based on, if you're looking at raw numbers, there's not a lot of sex appeal there, but they feel, you know, at what, 23 years old, he was drafted the year after Taylor Hall, but Adam Larson's upside is, you know, still they haven't tapped into that yet. And he had a breakout year last year with the Devils, playing alongside Andy Green. And so, you know, they feel like there's more of that to come. And we know what playing defense in the NHL is like. It's, you know, arguably the toughest position to master.
Dave Jamieson joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave is a host on TSN 1260 Radio in Edmonton. Dave, you know, we heard that it was apparent that Peter Chiarelli was going to trade one of the quote unquote core. And the question was it going to be Taylor Hall? Was it going to be Nugent Hopkins? Was it going to be Eberle? What's the status of Nail Yakupov, et cetera, et cetera. How close or how much do you think the decision to make Hall the guy available was affected by the Milan Lucic imminent signing when the trade went down?
Oh, I think it was absolutely connected. I mean, one was linked to the other, and the fact that Taylor Hall, despite getting Adam Larson back, has the most cachet on the open market. He has been the longest serving of the young core, and he is, and I think that, but he wouldn't have done it if he didn't know absolutely with, 100% certainty that he had Milan Lucic coming. If there's no Milan Lucic yesterday, then the natives would be more than restless. They'd be single file headed to, Rogers' place with pitchforks.
Sort of follow up to that, Dave, and take the return out of the equation. So the return, the fact that they didn't get enough for Taylor Hall, to make that notwithstanding that. Was Taylor Hall the right member of the core for the Oilers to have traded?
There's a couple of ways I could go with that. I think I'm not convinced, by the way, that Nugent Hopkins and Eberle aren't still
sure
that if somebody came to Peter Chiarelli and said, hey, what do you think? And again, defensemen here, that they wouldn't be moved. Hall is the most explosive, dynamic player. I think people thought when Connor McDavid came to Edmonton that there would be a marriage made in heaven between those two. That wasn't the case. And all of that said, Taylor Hall was really very instrumental in welcoming Connor McDavid into the league. He lived with him, brought him into his home, and was really good as a mentor. So I think he was the right person to move. And this signals, I think, as much as anything, however Adam Larson is going to play out on the ice for the Oilers, I think what this definitively signals is that Peter Chiarelli, this is his team. Last year was year one. You wander around the property and you take a look at the various holes, and we need to replace the roof here, and maybe the drainage needs to get fixed up. And he went around the property and now has got a full sense of how this house was built. And this isn't a knock on Taylor Hall, but he's guilty of being the longest serving one of the guys who were supposed to be part of the first rebuild. And I'm not even sure what number they're on right now with the Oilers. It doesn't matter. But what I'm saying? Like, he is the guy that has the deepest ties to the past. It's not a good past. It's not something the Oilers are proud of. They want to distance themselves. Now, whether they got better, they got bigger. Whether they got better, we will see.
Dave, do you think Peter Chiarelli is done in free agency? Chris Russell, Jason Demers, they're still available. Edmonton is looking to upgrade their defense. Do you think they're close to possibly signing one of those two defensemen?
Well, I don't know how close they might be. Yes, they need more. This can't be Adam Larson in, can't be the only addition to a defense. And there's another factor that I think you need to consider with the Oilers defense is the health of Oscar Klefbom. Oscar Klefbom last year, his season was cut quite short because he got something known as skate bite. Then it morphed into a blood infection. Then and he has been off skates, had been for a lot of last year. He only last week got back on skates. They brought him into town. He skated 3 or 4 days. First day was not good at all. He got progressively better. They're hopeful. They're optimistic. But, I mean, skating in the NHL, and he skates exceptionally well, if he's diminished at all and he's not the player they believe, and he was tracking to be the Oilers' best defenseman and could be for many, many years to come, if he's not Oscar Klefbom that we saw before the injury, then they got a real problem there. I mean, they're still not a good defense now, although Brandon... you should be hopeful if you're an Oiler fan for the future, because you've got Darnell Nurse, you've got, if he's healthy, Oscar Klefbom, you've got Emmett Davidson, who was a revelation last year, and now you've got Adam Larson, but you still need somebody else.
Dave Jamieson's our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, discussing the Edmonton Oilers' moves in the course of free agency and the start and the Taylor Hall-Adam Larson trade, of course. Dave, Milan Lucic, he comes over for the big money deal, the 7 years, the $42 million. You know, is he the right player for the Oilers at this time, or was this a case of Peter Chiarelli showing loyalty to a guy that he had back in Boston and maybe misunderstanding the current wave of the future in the NHL with speed first and foremost?
Well, you're not the first person to say that. As we watched the Pittsburgh Penguins sprint their way to a Stanley Cup this year, the Oilers still live in the Pacific, and which means they see the LA Kings and the San Jose Sharks and the Anaheim Ducks and so on. And so it's a rugged, in 2016's version of a rugged brand of hockey that they have to go through more nights than most during the course of an NHL season. So what they... If there's a consensus on anything with Lucic, is you're probably going to get three or four really good years, or very good years. And what that looks like, he doesn't fight anymore. He had three fights last year. He's a kind of a nuclear deterrent, if anything, with really good hands. So if you put him on a line with Connor McDavid, what does, you know, he come to, you know, what does he produce? I don't know, 25, 20 goals. But he is that hulking presence that goes now alongside Connor McDavid. He's added to a lineup that has Patrick Maroon, who was very good when he arrived here last year, and who also has Zach Cassian on it. I think what scares a lot of people is what does the last 3 years of that contract look like? Is he broken down? Is he an aging, slowish winner in the NHL? I mean, we don't even know what the game's going to look like at that point, but I can't imagine it's going to get slower.
Dave, Milan Lucic's decision to sign with Edmonton, he mentioned yesterday 97 was really one of the major reasons, but how much of an impact did Milan Lucic and Peter Chiarelli's previous relationship with the Boston Bruins, how much did that factor in to his decision to sign with Edmonton?
I think it could not have hurt, but this is business. And if Chiarelli didn't think for, you know, all of the right reasons that Milan Lucic, I mean, it's one thing to be loyal. It's another thing to, you know, show $42 million of loyalty. I think that, you know, I don't think, and Peter Chiarelli stated, he has a vision for how his hockey teams will be. And they are large. They are physically dominating when possible. And now with Connor McDavid and Puljujarvi, who they did not expect to have, this is a team that going forward is going to be a blend of supreme skill with Connor McDavid, and who knows what Puljujarvi is going to be, and they still have Nugent Hopkins and Everly, and so there's lots of young assets. I know we mentioned Neil Yakupov off the top. He just sort of sits over there. He's kind of an elephant in the room. A lot of people thought he'd be dealt, but he's still an Oiler for now. Peter Chiarelli has a template, and he announced that when he was hired, and this, to me, sounds like it's him going down the list of things he likes in hockey players, and Milan Lucic checks off a lot of the boxes.
Dave, we'll let you go on this last question. Of Eberle and Nugent Hopkins, if one of them gets traded, which one do you think is most likely to be dealt?
Well, it pains me to say it, but I think Ryan Nugent Hopkins can help the Edmonton Oilers. He could help a lot of teams. He's not a spectacular. I mean, when you think of a young talent, like, you know, we immediately think that he is the guy that you can't take your eyes off of, that does remarkable things each and every night. He's great at the little things. I mean, he is a subtle hockey player, and I mean that as a compliment. In the face-off circle, his passing and his ice awareness is tremendous. He is, and he's really defensively responsible. You know, again, not a hulking presence at all, but not a small player. But at the end of the day, you sometimes have to look hard and pay attention to him to notice him. But when you do, and you see what he can bring every night, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is, and he's had a few injuries early in his career, but it would pain me. But I think that he would be, a guy that if I'm a GM looking to, address a need at center, also get better defensively, I'd go, I want that guy. But I hope the Oilers don't move him because I think he's too valuable and too useful. But I think if, what does the market want? I think that they would, he would be the next guy.
Dave Jamieson is the host of the Dave Jamieson Show on TSN 1260 in Edmonton. Dave, always appreciate your time and your insight into the Edmonton Oilers.
Thanks, guys.
Take care, Dave. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. When we come back, Ezzy and I give our take on the Subban for Weber deal. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
PK is a special individual and a very talented player. Today, we're presented with a unique opportunity to improve our team, and I truly believe we took a step in the right direction. And he got my attention when he brought the name of Shea Weber. If you're going to get the player of the caliber of Shea Weber, you can't ask for more. He's a hell of a defenseman. He's a stud, and you don't expect to get something else when you get Shea Weber.
That is Montreal Canadiens general manager Marc Bergevin discussing the acquisition of Shea Weber from the Nashville Predators in exchange for defenseman PK Subban. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com.
Drew, I bet Keener's going to get a lot more requests for PK Subban Nashville Predators jerseys, by the way.
I'm sure those are flying off the shelf in Nash Vegas, as that, of all the trades and all the moves on the Wednesday, the 23 minutes of chaos.
What's Nash Vegas?
Nash Vegas is what they call Nashville.
I've never heard that.
Smashville and Nash Vegas.
I'm not as well traveled around the United States as you are.
It's true.
Although I have been to Kentucky for your wedding.
That's
but
true.
I haven't been to Nashville.
I have been.
That's actually probably the American city I'd like to visit the most.
Really? The most?
Yeah.
Well, they call it Nash Vegas and Smashville.
Yeah. I've heard of Smashville, but I've never heard of Nash Vegas.
Nash Vegas too, yeah.
I thought you were combining like the Las Vegas expansion team with Nashville. I wasn't sure what was going on there.
Okay. Well, now you're okay with how
we're good.
Explanation?
We're good.
Good. Yeah. Good. I'm glad. Anyways. Of all the moves on that Wednesday afternoon, that frenzy, this is the one that shocked me the most, and I just cannot understand it from Marc Bergevin's perspective whatsoever.
Drew, how about this? When was the last time a former Norris Trophy winner was traded for a three-time Norris Trophy finalist? Stu Grimson said it less than an hour ago.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about a franchise defenseman being traded for a franchise defenseman, right? It's incredible. I mean, this is the biggest trade we've seen in a long time. And earlier in the year, we saw Ryan Johansson traded for Seth Jones. I mean, David Poile has proven that he's not afraid to trade big-time players, right?
For David Poile, I think this was a no-brainer.
Well,
I think this was a no-brainer. You look at, with all due respect to Shea Weber, and I know people there's a lot of analytics people, particularly, and I don't say that with any criticism, who say that he is slipping, and I don't think he is as good as he was. I think he's still a very good NHL defenseman, but I don't think he's as good as he was. And he's under contract for 10 more seasons to the age of 40. And in exchange, you can get PK Subban, who is one of the most dynamic defensemen in the league, maybe alongside Erik Karlsson in terms of offensive capabilities. To me, this is an absolute no-brainer whatsoever.
Here's my take on the trade, Drew.
Please.
I agree. You know I'm a big Shea Weber fan.
You are.
He's one of my favorite players in the NHL. I love those type of players, right? Like, I love those mean physical defensemen, right? I'm from the Scott Stevens school of defensemen.
And yes, certainly.
And to me, Shea Weber is like a Scott Stevens with more offensive capability, even though when Scotty Stevens came into the NHL, he put up big numbers. But sure, needless to say, Shea Weber scored 20 goals and 51 points in the NHL last year. So
he's not a bum.
It's not like Shea Weber, is a horrible defenseman. And not only that, I still think he's a top 20 defenseman, maybe even top 10 defenseman in the NHL. But when you're talking about this trade, one for one, PK Subban for Shea Weber, I think in the short term, it's a wash. I think in the long term, when you look at the fact that, as you mentioned, there's 10 years left on that contract, mm-hmm, I think in the long term, Nashville wins this trade unquestionably. Now, if you're talking about right now, in the present moment, PK Subban versus Shea Weber, I think it's an interesting argument as far as who's the better defenseman, because Shea Weber is 3 years older, sure, than PK Subban. PK Subban's 27. Yeah. He's got a Norris Trophy. Excellent defenseman, as you mentioned. Offensively dynamic. He's had his struggles defensively. Sometimes he gambles a little bit too much.
Yeah.
They're different defensemen, Drew. When you're talking about Shea Weber, he's got the booming shot. He's got the hardest shot in the league. Every year at the skills competition, yeah, what does he hit? 108, 109, whatever it is.
A huge number.
Him and Buff have the two hardest shots in the NHL, I would say. When you talk about PK Subban versus Weber, I think you have to consider what each team needs. And one of the reasons why I believe Nashville makes this trade, Drew, is because Nashville lost to San Jose, and I think they saw the offense they were getting from their defensemen. I think Brent Burns specifically. I think that Nashville wanted a little bit more offense in PK Subban.
I think
when you're talking about Montreal, when you factor in the Andrew Shaw signing, Montreal wanted to be a little bit tougher, a little bit more physical. And I think that's what Shea Weber is a better defensive defenseman than PK Subban.
Everything you said there makes sense. I can justify every argument you just made, except that when you look at the contract terms, Shea Weber's contract really should have been unmovable for the Nashville Predators.
And that was back in the day when you could sign guys
to
12-year
deals. And of
deals.
Course, they never wanted to, and Philly signed them to the offer sheet, and Nashville had to match. So yeah, they had a bad hand played, but so be it. But the way Shea Weber has performed over the last couple of seasons and the way he is trending performance-wise, because he's got so many miles on his body. And he's played.
He doesn't miss. You know what? Everyone's saying that, but you know, in the last 8 years, he's missed 20 games.
I'm not saying
he misses three games a year. Everybody's saying, okay, well, you know, his body's going to wear down. Well, you know, Chris Chelios played well into his early 40s.
Look,
Shea Weber's not a slouch. There's no reason to believe that 3 years from now, Shea Weber is going to all of a sudden be some type of average
defenseman. No, I don't think he's going to break down physically, but I think he's going to slow down simply because he's played in the league for 10 years, and every player who plays in the league and reaches the early 30s, who's got, you know, 1,000 games under his belt,
right,
slows down. It's just human. It's the law of being a human. That means you're going to slow down. And then add another 10 years on top of that, so that when he's 37, 38, 39, and he's 40, and he's making and he's taking up $7+ million per season on the Montreal Canadiens salary cap, it's unbelievable to me that Montreal would have traded PK Subban to acquire not Shea Weber, but Shea Weber's contract.
Right, but when you think about Shea Weber and the fact that he will really start to slow down 5 to 7 years from now, right? Then you worry about that now. I mean, like, when you're talking about like this
five
trade
to seven
now,
years from now, I think would be the Canadians would be willing to accept that. I think there's a legitimate fear that slowdown happens 2 to 4 years from now.
We watched Shea Weber a lot this past year. I mean, you're still talking about it again. I'm not saying that Montreal Canadiens fans shouldn't be upset that PK Subban was traded. I've said repeatedly on this show, Drew, I'm a huge PK Subban fan. So let's not get it twisted there. I mean, I like PK Subban. Yeah. I like everything about his game. I really do. I like everything about his personality. I like the fact that he's flamboyant. I love that.
Sure.
But I just think that Montreal Canadiens fans don't realize how good of a defenseman Shea Weber still is. He's still a dominant defenseman in the Western Conference. Now you have him in the East. Like, ask all of the GMs and coaches around the league, and they will say that they hate playing against Shea Weber. And I realize that Shea Weber was not good in the San Jose Sharks series. I realize that. But Thornton, Pavelski, and Hurdle, I mean, that's a top line in the NHL. And again, I realize he slowed down. I'm not denying that. I'm just saying that I don't think – I'll still take 90% of Shea Weber right now versus 98% of the other defensemen in the NHL.
Right, but would you take 90% of Shea Weber over 100% of PK Subban? Because I wouldn't. And one other thing.
I would. I think Shea Weber is a better all-around defenseman than PK Subban is right now.
Okay. That's fair. Your opinion. I tend to disagree, but that's what makes the show a lot better.
PK Subban, to me, is still not a shutdown defenseman in the NHL.
I don't think he's ever going to be, but I think that Nashville probably doesn't necessarily need him to be.
The teams that win the Stanley Cup, though, Drew, have shutdown defensemen.
Pittsburgh?
Duncan Keith.
Pittsburgh doesn't have a shutdown defenseman.
Well, defensemen that are well-rounded.
Yeah, okay. I can justify that. A separate point altogether now. When PK Subban donated $10 million to that Children's Hospital in Montreal...
Right, and that's awesome.
That should have made him a Montreal Canadian for life.
I'm not disagreeing with that. I think PK Subban being traded for Montreal is unfortunate, but Marc Bergevin wanted him out. I mean, it was pretty clear that he wanted PK Subban out.
And the fact that Marc Bergevin chose Michel Therrien and to some extent Marc Bergevin's own ego over PK Subban is astounding to me.
I don't disagree with that.
It's absolutely astounding that PK Subban, who donated the $10 million, who became a fixture in the Montreal community, who, sure, he was flamboyant, who, you know...
I like that flamboyancy, though.
Look, Jean Béliveau and Mrs. Béliveau loved PK Subban.
Buff is flamboyant, I love that.
And
Ovechkin's flamboyant.
Those guys...
Lion A is flamboyant.
I have no problem with that either. And the fact that the Montreal Canadiens organization... couldn't get over themselves to handle that, and the fact that Marc Bergevin chose Michel Therrien, who is a dime a dozen NHL head coach, they are going to rue the day they made that trade, just like they rue the day they traded Patrick Waugh in 23 years ago.
And I don't disagree with anything that you said there, because PK Subban and the type of talent that he is,
yeah,
and the personality, and as you mentioned, the stuff he did off ice is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he really needs to be commended for the stuff he did off ice. But when you talk about the return that he got, I think Marc Bergevin did pretty well. That's all I'm saying. Shea Weber's contract might be a bit of an albatross 7 years from now, but I think in the short term, Shea Weber's the type of player that you want playing in front of Carey Price.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to continue to look at some of the transactions throughout the NHL. Hour number three coming up on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Well, you know, Dan Hamill, it was no secret that the trade deadline, we tried to obtain his rights and were unable to. But, you know, he's a player. He's been in the league many years. He's played in the Olympics, won gold medals. He's been an elite defenseman in the league for many years. And he brings that experience, that composure that we need. You know, I talked about our young group of players coming in. It's important to have that veteran there, you know, him and Johnny Oduya. I know they're going to be great mentors for our young guys. And I just think he's a good fit for us.
That is Dallas Stars general manager Jim Neal discussing the Stars' signing of Dan Hamhuis. It's a two-year deal for Hamhuis, $7.5 million, an average annual value of $3.75 million. Welcome back to hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. It's brought to you by Bell Acres Golf and Country Club and Clear Lake Golf Course. Illegal Curve is thrilled to be presenting the 2016 Bell Acres Pro-Am. Coming up this Friday, 6 days from today, July the 8th. Play with a pro and enjoy an incredible day of golf featuring hole prizes, pre- and post-round meals, and post-round live entertainment. For more information, visit bellacres.com. Right now, we got some golf passes to give away, so let's do caller number 3 to 780-1290. You're going to win 4 passes to either Bell Acres or Clear Lake Golf Course. Caller number 3 right now to 204-780-1290. Talk to producer Rory. He's going to hook you up with 4 passes to either Bell Acres or Clear Lake Golf Course.
Yeah, we've played Bell Acres this summer. We haven't got out to Clear Lake. Clear Lake apparently is a
Huss beautiful, was up there.
Yeah, Huss yeah. was up there. He was at Dauphin Country Fest.
And then, of course, close by to yep. so you can go out to Clear Lake.
We're going to get out to Clear Lake as well. I've played Hecla, but I've never played Clear Lake.
Sure.
So very excited.
Complete opposite directions.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, I mean, those are kind of similar courses, two of the nicest courses that I'm aware of in Winnipeg, pardon me, Manitoba. So also very excited for the Bell Acres Pro-Am coming up Friday. We're going to dust off the sticks and play.
Oh, yeah. Are you going to bring your A game?
I only really am able to bring a C game.
C game, okay. Yeah. Fair enough. A quick update. You know, we're a full-service operation here at TSN 1290.
Yeah, we're a one-stop shop.
One-stop shop. Wimbledon update, a stunning upset. Novak Djokovic, world number one, one of the greatest tennis players of all time, has just been eliminated from Wimbledon, falling in four sets to Sam Querrey, who's an American tennis player. This is huge news for Milos Raonic, as Milos was in the same quarter of the draw with Novak Djokovic. So now Milos Raonic, his chief competitor, they were supposed to meet in the quarterfinals if everything played out accordingly. Novak Djokovic out, Milos Raonic's path to potentially a Wimbledon semifinal and or final a lot easier now that Sam Querrey has defeated Novak Djokovic.
So, Drew, you could say another one for Milos.
Another one for Milos. He's going to be in action against Jack Sock later on today. That game, of course, that match you can, of course, see on TSN.
Are you sure he's not playing Jack Underwear?
I'm positive that Jack Underwear doesn't exist, but Jack Sock does. Anyways, let's talk about the Dan Hamm who's signing. As he goes to Dallas Stars, he mentioned, for 2 years and $7.5 million.
Like the signing.
Like the signing. So this is Dan Hamm who was expected to go to Dallas at the trade deadline. He waived his no trade clause, and then for whatever reason, Jim Benning could not make the deal come to fruition, and now Hamhuis goes there as a complete unrestricted free agent. Does he fit in nicely there on the left side of the Dallas Stars?
Yeah, he does. He will be either on the top pair or the second pair, along with John Klingberg there on the right side. Dan Hamhuis, you know, speaking of guys that have slowed down a little bit, Shea Weber is another guy from BC, actually. But Dan Hamhuis, to me, is still a top-pairing defenseman in the NHL, and this is what the Dallas Stars need. They lost Alex Goligoski. It looks like Chris Russell and Jason Demers aren't going to be back in Dallas, so wouldn't be surprised if Dallas makes another move here to acquire a defenseman, just because they've lost three of their top six defensemen. They did re-sign Jordy Benn, Ben's brother.
3 years, $3.3 million for Jordy Benn, who's
more of a
serviceable
six or seven.
Guy.
Yeah. More of a six or seven guy, and you know they're keeping him around, obviously, to make brother Jamie happy. No, I'm just kidding.
And he played well for the Stars
Jordy,
in his role.
Jordy Benn's a good, solid depth defenseman. He's a character guy. But when you're Chris Russell was acquired at the trade deadline.
Yeah.
Jason Demers was acquired for Brendan Dillon from the San Jose Sharks. I was a little bit surprised that Demers wasn't a guy they kept. I've always liked Jason Demers. Steven Johns is a guy that's emerged as a good defenseman for them. A few guys to me that I look at this defense, again, you know, getting away just a second from Dan Hamhuis, a guy that I wonder if he factors in is Julius Honka.
Sure. He's a former first-round pick of the Stars back in 2012, if I'm not mistaken.
I think it was later. I want to say 2013 or 14 first-rounder, but
you're right, 2014. I'm wrong.
Yeah.
14th overall.
And we were there in Philly, Drew. You should have remembered that.
I don't remember many things. I have a terrible memory. Ask my wife. I have no idea at all.
Honka is a guy that played really well for the Dallas Stars AHL affiliate.
Stars.
Yes, I wouldn't be surprised if he's a guy that factors into the top six, but. Just looking at the defense, you know, you've got Hamhuis, you've got Klingberg, we mentioned Oduya, Jordy Benn, Steven Johns. Just, you know, wondering if Jim Nill isn't done there acquiring maybe another defenseman.
Well, plus he's got that, I mean, he's been talked about as the destination maybe for Ben Bishop because they have that glut of goaltenders. Or Marc-Andre Fleury. Yep. You know, he's been going with Lehtinen and Niemi, and both of them weren't very good last year. So
no, we were talking about, just a side story, Drew, we were talking about David Poile not afraid to pull a trigger on a trade. Jim Nill's another guy. He brought in Jason Spezza. He's made quite a few moves there.
Tyler Seguin.
Tyler Seguin, right. Colorado. Tyler Seguin was before Jim Nill.
That's right. But Colorado, they had sort of three sort of depth signings as well. The biggest of the three, Joe Colburn, goes there, ex of the Calgary Flames. He gets 2 years, $5 million, $2.5 million salary cap hit. Fedor Tuten, who had been bought out by the Columbus Blue Jackets, gets 1 year and $2 million. And Patrick Wierkoch, a guy that some people thought that the Jets might have some interest in, ex of the Ottawa Senators, gets 1 year and $800,000.
Yeah, I like the Colburn and Wierkoch signings. Fedor Tootin has been on the decline for some years now. Fedor Tootin was a top pairing defenseman for many years, but
for Columbus,
if you watched him play, and before that the Rangers,
sure.
If you watched him play this past year or the past couple years, I mean, Fedor Tootin is not the defenseman that he once was. So Patrick Wiercott, you're talking about a guy who just didn't factor into the future with the Ottawa Senators. But when you're talking about the Avalanche, they needed to go out and acquire more defensemen. Patrick Wiercott is a guy, not the most physical guy, but he's a guy that can move the puck. He, mm-hmm. You know, he can play on your second power play unit, that type of thing. So like the Wiercott signing, Colburn is a guy that scored 19 goals last year. So, I mean, he's a guy that can put the puck in the net. A guy, big guy, was a guy that didn't quite work out in Calgary. He was a depth player for most of his career. But he's a guy with Colorado, he'll get more of an opportunity. But, Drew, as a whole, I look at these moves, and for an Avalanche team that didn't make the playoffs last year, that's in a division where everybody else has either improved or is just as good as they once were. And so you're talking Dallas, you're talking Winnipeg, I think has a really good shot this coming year of making the playoffs. Are these moves going to do enough to make them better?
Well, no. And what Colorado, they won't. And Colorado really needs to focus on getting both Nathan MacKinnon and deciding what to do with Tyson Barry. MacKinnon, of course, on RFA coming off his entry-level deal, and Tyson Barry on RFA is not too far away from unrestricted free agency. A lot of trade rumors surrounding Tyson Barry. So those are the real ones to watch there in Colorado to see how those two contracts play out. Moving about 600 kilometers? 600 kilometers to the southeast of us into Minnesota. Did I get that right?
Drew, what are my Google Maps?
Okay, I think I'm not too far off from that. The Minnesota Wild, they get Eric Staal under contract. Three years, $10.5 million for Eric Staal of somewhat nearby Thunder Bay. Average annual value of $3.5 million per season. Also, they bring back Chris Stewart. 2 years, $2.3 million. Average annual value of $1.15 million. And before free agency opened, they re-signed Jason Zucker. He was a pending RFA. 2 years, $4 million. Start with Eric Staal. You say you like that signing. Talk about why.
Yeah, and you know this kind of goes back to what Richie was saying earlier in the year. This Minnesota...
I don't know who this Richie is that you speak of.
Sorry, Mr. Pollock.
Thank you.
Richie's big problem with the Minnesota Wild...
Mr. Pollock.
Sorry, Mr. Pollock. Master Pollock.
Yeah.
No, Richie said this quite a bit during the show this past year. The Minnesota Wild were not a quick enough team. And when you look at a lot of the teams that had success in the playoffs, whether that's a Pittsburgh... whether that's a Tampa Bay in the East or when you're talking about San Jose,
sure.
These are teams that were quicker than the Minnesota Wild. The Jets are a quicker team than the Minnesota Wild. And so when you're talking about a Thomas Vanek, for example, he's a slower player. Of course, they bought him out, and now he's on Detroit. But when you bring in a guy like Eric Staal, it doesn't make you a faster team. Eric Staal is not as fast as he once was, but Eric Staal makes you better at the center position. So I like the trade, and I like that they only gave him 3 years. If they gave him 5 or 6 years, Drew, I wouldn't have liked this contract as much. Eric Staal went to the New York Rangers prior to the trade deadline. It didn't work out for him. The Rangers didn't get out of the first round, and Eric Staal didn't produce like he wanted to. But when you're talking about the Minnesota Wild, Eric Staal is a replacement for Thomas Vanek, who they lost, so he replaces that offense. And they, I believe, need a veteran presence on that team because after Zach Parise, after Jason Pominville, it's still a young team, but ultimately, I think this is just a small piece because Eric Staal, does he line up? Is he a third-line center now at this point in his career? Probably. Is he a second-line center? Can he play those types of minutes? Can he still produce 50 or 60 points? I think he can. But these are also good problems for new coach Bruce Boudreau to have. But ultimately, I think the Wild and their season depends on how their younger wingers produce. So you're talking about guys like, sure, Jason Zucker you can throw in there, but you're talking about the Nino Niederreiters, those types of players, and they didn't produce like they should have last year. And, you know, it's still a Minnesota Wild team that I think is good in net, and they've still got a top defense. So when you're talking about guys like Brodin, Ryan Suter, Marco Scandella, but the reason why the Minnesota Wild can't get out of the first or second round is because they haven't had to enough game breakers.
Sure.
When Zach Parise went down with that injury, Drew, in the first round of the playoffs, nobody picked them to win. And that shows that they didn't have enough depth. So Eric Staal gives them a little bit depth, but I still think they're missing one or two pieces there for this team to really take the next step.
Let's head to break. Before we do so, just a little note that was probably missed in the action of yesterday is part of Kevin Cheveldayoff's scrum after the three signings. He was asked about Thomas Raffel, who of course made the Manitoba Moose out of training camp. Kevin Cheveldayoff confirmed that the Jets are going to go in a different avenue away from Thomas Raffel. So that's a guy who was really hit by the injury bug last year. Probably didn't get an opportunity to fully show what he had. But Thomas Raffel and the Winnipeg Jets seem like they're going to go their separate ways. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we look at the Pacific Division.
It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Team that has such great history and you know, being a lover of hockey that I am, you know, being able to wear a jersey like this that some of the greats that have worn this jersey is such a special feeling, and to be able to come here and play in front of the fans that they have here in Edmonton is something also special, and I hope that, you know, I don't disappoint him and I don't let him down, and we can get back to being a championship caliber team.
That's Milan Lucic, new Edmonton Oiler forward. He comes over from the Los Angeles Kings. Of course, a lot of ties between Milan Lucic and Oilers general manager Peter Chiarelli. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Lars Kaliu is in town. If you're looking for something to do post-Canada Day, check it out. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. One show tonight, 7:15 p.m. start time. Tickets at rumorscomedyclub.com. Lucic, a 7-year contract for the Edmonton Oilers. It's worth $42 million, an average annual value, a salary cap hit of $6 million per season. As we spoke about the Larson for Hall trade earlier, your thoughts on the Oilers poning up big bucks for Milan Lucic?
Yeah, and we talked to Dave Jamieson about 45 minutes ago, and you know, he agreed that part of the Taylor Hall for Adam Larson trade was knowing that there was a good chance or a 100% chance that they were going to sign Milan Lucic, right? And you look at the term and you say, okay, 7 years, $42 million, $6 million a year for Milan Lucic. You know, he's a slower guy. Does he really fit in today's NHL? He's a power forward. You know, maybe not as interested in the fisticuffs and you know, the physical element of the game, maybe as it used to be, even though he is a guy, you know, that if the puck goes into the corner, you know, he's going to put you into the boards most likely. He's a big guy, right? And he can drop the gloves, no doubt. I like the contract. I don't like the Taylor Hall trade from an Edmonton perspective. I mentioned that last hour, Drew. I like that trade more so for the Devils. But when you're talking about Lucic, I mean, this is a guy that played on the top line of the LA Kings last year. And he kept up with that line. I mean, it's not the fastest line. The Kings are not the fastest team. And Lucic is not ever going to be a skater like Taylor Hall, for example, right? But Lucic, he can keep up. And I mean, he's a guy that can play at this level and play at a high level. And when you're looking at everything else that the Edmonton Oilers have, right? Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Jordan Eberle. One of those players might get moved, Drew. Yeah, Nail Yakupov, more. We thought was going to get moved, but
still do think he's going to get moved, probably.
Probably. And they do have a lot of guys that are faster players, right? So that doesn't concern me as much. I mean, would I have maybe preferred to sign him for 5 years? Yeah, I probably would have if I was Peter Chiarelli.
But I think that's
would have signed him to 5 years, but Lucic, from his perspective, you know, Milan Lucic, Drew, put it this way, he knows that this is his big payday, right?
Sure.
He's never going to get a contract, another 7-year contract. His agent knew, let's go for 7 years. Let's go for the home run. Let's not go for the triple. Let's go for the home run, right? So from that perspective, it's not that surprising. Ultimately, though, Milan Lucic to me, Drew, is a complimentary player on this team. Like, the core of this team is McDavid, Dreis. Not to say that he isn't. He obviously is a part, but I mean the primary core of this team is going to be Taylor. Pardon me.
Connor McDavid,
Leon Draisaitl, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins.
If they don't trade one of those guys, right. Milan Lucic is certainly going to be a top six player for the Los Angeles Kings. Right. And the contract for the first, it's really like a lot of the contracts that were handed out yesterday, is that the average annual value isn't horrific. Probably not fantastic, but not horrific. It's the length. It's the years 5, 6, and 7 of that deal that might look worse than the first couple of years of that. Right. It'll be interesting to see him sort of, if he plays with Connor McDavid, it'll be very interesting to see him play alongside, if he can keep up, or if he sort of plays the trailer role and lets McDavid do his actions at 150 miles per hour, take all the attention on him, and then have an opportunity there to sort of pick up the pieces, to pick up the scraps for Connor McDavid.
Right, and these are problems for Oilers head coach Todd McClellan, right? Like, he has to figure out, where does Milan Lucic really fit in? Does he play with Connor McDavid? Does he play with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins? He's certainly going to be a top six forward on this team. Jordan Eberle, I would expect to play on the right side of Connor McDavid. They were really good together in half of a season last year, right? Because McDavid missed half the season.
Sure.
And a guy like Patrick Maroon, I think, factors into the top six. When you have a player like Connor McDavid, it's not hard to find line mates for Connor McDavid.
And everybody wants, and Milan Lucic said it himself, everybody wants to play with Connor McDavid. His presence there is such a driving force, is such an attractive feature.
I'd score 10 goals playing with Connor McDavid.
Probably. You'd be winded skating up and down the ice one lap, but that's a separate issue altogether. There's a bit of an aside right now. News is coming in regarding Jason Demare. A lot of people thought Jason Demare was going to end up in the Edmonton Oilers. That is now officially not the case. Jason Demare has apparently agreed to a 5-year deal with the Florida Panthers for $22.5 million.
Good scouting there.
Yeah, good. A little iffy there. 5 years, $22.5 million for Jason Demare to go to Florida. It's a little bit over $4 million per season for Jason Demare to go to the Florida Panthers, who apparently are signing absolutely everybody this offseason in the NHL. The Panthers tremendously busy when it comes to free agency. They had previously acquired Keith Yandle, so they're really overhauling their defense. They signed Aaron Ekblad to that big contract extension. Jason Demare goes to Florida on a 5-year deal, so take him off the list of a potential target for the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, and good on you, Drew, for breaking that, because that just happened within the last 15 minutes. Like that signing for the Florida Panthers. I liked the Keith Yandle contract as well. I was kind of in the minority on that one. A lot of people thought that Keith Yandle's 7-year contract was too long. People forget Keith Yandle's only 29 years old.
All these contracts are too long. All these contracts are, it seems like all the contracts were either 1-year, prove-it contracts, or they were 7-year contracts. There was no in-between. I mean, there was a little in-between for some players, but for the most part, they were either all or nothing. And I think the too many of them fell on the all side than they did the nothing side.
You know what, though, Drew? Jason Demare is an established defenseman. He played in Dallas's top four last year. He's a guy that not only is good defensively, he can skate, and he's a guy that can contribute offensively. And when you're talking about the Panthers, the rest of their D, Brian Campbell's gone.
Yeah.
So they replace Brian Campbell essentially with Jason Demare, and they don't have Eric Gudbranson because they traded him for Jared McCann. And essentially, if you think about it, he's replaced by Michael Matheson, who was really good in his rookie year for the Florida Panthers. Didn't play a full season, but he was named top defenseman at the World Hockey Championships for Canada, by the way. So Mike Matheson, good young defenseman. We got to mention his 8-year contract as well, right?
Sure.
I mean, Aaron Ekblad, I think, is a future Norris winner. That Florida Panthers team, again, good scouting.
Iffy about the scouting. Anyways, keeping with the Pacific Division, let's look at a couple more signings. Mikhail Bodker, 4 years, $16 million in San Jose, a salary cap hit of $4 million per season there. They also signed David Schlemko to a 4-year, $8.4 million contract, an average annual value of $2.1 million. I like the Bodker signing, sort of under the radar. This guy, Bodker, played his career and played the end of last year in Colorado, but before that in Arizona. He can score goals at an NHL level, and that's hard to do, and he goes to a nice situation there in San Jose. By the sounds of it, he left money on the table to go and play for Peter DeBoer and the San Jose Sharks.
Yeah, Mikhail Bodker is an underrated left winger in the NHL. I like these moves. Schlemko is a guy that I thought that the Jets might be in on. He was a guy that had a nice season for New Jersey last year. Mm-hmm. He's been a bit of a journeyman defenseman. I thought he might slot in on the left side there as a depth defenseman for the Jets. But yeah, I like these signings. Mikhail Bodker, you know, he's a guy that most likely I would imagine would play either on the second line or third line. Maybe slots in with Logan Couture there. Certainly Thornton, Pavelski, and Hurdle has kind of been established as their top line there. But the San Jose team, I think also with these acquisitions, they know that this team is built to win now. And, you know, it's kind of interesting to me, you know, that Mikhail Bodker, a player like that, is one of those guys that you think maybe when you look at Lucic and you look at Stamkos and Eriksson and some of these other guys that were signed, you say, that's a decent signing. But again, Drew, last year, Joel Ward and Paul Martin were kind of considered, you know, just decent signings. Yeah. But look, they went to the Stanley Cup Finals.
I like it. There's nothing about, you know, it's an under-the-radar signing. Mikhail Bodker is 26 years old. He's not old. He'll be 27 come December.
He's a good player.
He plays, you know, in the last few years of his 20s. He's been the 20-goal scorer in the NHL before. Pardon me, he's not been a 20-goal scorer, but he's been a 50-point guy back in 2013-14. He's a guy who's going to get you double digits in goals.
Mikhail Bodker, to me, is similar to like a Michael Frolik, a bit of a Swiss Army knife. Yeah. Can play on your first line, can play on your third line. So it's a good signing. I mean, we already know that the San Jose Sharks have some of the best forwards in the NHL. I mean, when you talk about the depth that they have after Thornton, Pavelski, Hurdle, Couture, you've got guys like Jonas Donskoi, Melker Carlson, Joel Ward, Chris Tierney. I mean, they've got a good group there. So that Sharks team, I think, you know, it's nice that they've been able to keep the core together and then add to it.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Warren Reichel, the general manager of the Windsor Spitfires, joins us. Logan Stanley, of course, was the Jets' second first-round pick at last week's NHL draft. We talk about him with Warren Reichel coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Shortly after 11:30 in the morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel and Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio as we've been going through all the different free agent news and notes from throughout the NHL and what has been a very busy week here in the NHL transaction world.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program Warren Reichel. Warren is the general manager of the OHL's Windsor Spitfire. Of course, the Winnipeg Jets drafted Windsor Spitfire defenseman Logan Stanley in the first round of last week's NHL draft in Buffalo. Warren, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. Great to have you.
It's great to have you on with us, Warren. We obviously brought you on, you know, the Logan Stanley draft by the Jets, you know, piqued our interest to have you on. You are the general manager of the Windsor Spitfires. For Jets fans who may not be familiar with Logan Stanley, they know he's a big, tall defenseman, you know, since the Jets drafted him last week. They've gotten more familiar with him. You know, Can you sort of explain, you know, what does Logan Stanley do on the back end for the Spitfires that makes him so special to warrant being picked in the first round of the NHL draft?
There's a number of things. I mean, first of all, the biggest thing is he's the most improved player that I've ever had here. It's been 10 years now since Bob Bugner and I own the team, and he's the most improved player over one summer we ever had. And he obviously vaulted into the first round, and now he's part of the Winnipeg Jets, but the biggest thing is the space he takes up. He's 6'7", and his stick is long, and it's not easy to get to the net on him. And surprisingly, he has a good glide for a big guy. You know, usually at 18 years old, you don't see a big guy like that having the most natural glide or pivoting ability, but he has it already, and that's scary to see what he's going to be when he's 22, 23, and his pans are good for a big guy, too. He makes plays. We're more of a puck possession team under Rocky Thompson's style now, and he's a very good puck handler as well.
You know, Warren, all the scouting reports on Logan Stanley were that he's more of a defensive defenseman. He's got a bit of a mean streak in him, physical two-way defenseman. Do you think his offensive upside is a little bit higher than maybe some people are giving him credit for?
100%. You know, we were out having a few choice cocktails last night with the coaching staff and the ownership, and you know, that actual discussion came up, and really last year we went with Sergachev was at the top. Obviously, the power play, we went four forwards, and one of them including Winnipeg Jets, Brendan Lemieux, sorry.
Yeah.
We went with 1D. He's going to creep into that power play situation this year for Rocky and our team. So he'll be able to put some points up, and he's got the shot from the point. He's got all the different kinds of shots too. But obviously, when you had a general like Sergachev up there, Logan kind of took a back seat to it, and he was our main shutdown pairing when we played at home against the other team's top line.
Warren Reichel is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Warren is the general manager of the Windsor Spitfires. And Warren, we'll get back to Logan Stanley, of course, but you know, the Spitfires had three first-round picks that selected last week in Buffalo. You mentioned Mikhail Sergachev. Logan Brown went a couple picks later to the Ottawa Senators, and of course, Logan Stanley to the Winnipeg Jets. Just how gratifying is it as a general manager to see three of your own players, quote-unquote, drafted in the first round and see the, you know, how these players' lives are going to change being first-round NHL selections?
Well, it certainly is. You know, after, you know, we won back-to-back Memorial Cups, we could, took a step backwards there a little bit, and this is very gratifying to get back on. The franchise has never had three first-rounders, even with players such as, you know, Hall and Ellis and Fowler, never in the same year. So this is very gratifying for the city, for the year we're going into next year. Obviously, hosting the Memorial Cup, it's huge. And we hope to make it four. Clayton Keller's the Phoenix's pick is also our property, and we're hoping to lure him here soon. So we could have a pretty good team. If he comes, we have a pretty good team starting the year here on the Ontario Hockey League.
You know, getting back to Logan Stanley, because of course that's really the key interest for Winnipeg Jets fans right now. You know, you mentioned his tremendous improvement from one summer to the next. You know, going into this year, you know, when you had your exit meetings with Logan, what was an area you wanted him to focus on in this offseason? What's an area you think he still needs to sort of develop as he enters into another year of junior hockey?
Well, I think it's twofold. I mean, I said to him, we've been through this now and we've seen it, and I've been in the game for a long time, and I said, you know, obviously enjoy the draft with your family. That's the biggest thing. And then as soon as it's over, you got to get focused. Obviously, I'm sure there's a mini camp in Winnipeg. He's got to be ready for that. And sometimes these kids, you know, it doesn't mean nothing that you're drafted. There's kids. It's the hardest league in the world to make. There's 600 guys in the league at one time, and they don't really care where you're picked. Yeah, you're going to get probably a little more chance than somebody else in the first round, but he's got to get right back to work. And that starts now. He took his 2 weeks off. But he gets back to work, and if he can achieve the level of improvement he did last year, you know, Jet fans and Windsor Spitfire fans are going to be in for a good player for a long time.
Warren, you mentioned Brendan Lemieux earlier, of course, son of former Conn Smythe Trophy winner Claude Lemieux. He played for your Windsor Spitfires this past season, put in 23 goals in 34 games, and added another four goals in the playoffs. What were your impressions of Brendan Lemieux, a guy who's already had a little bit of experience here playing for the Manitoba Moose?
Well, he is a good player. We got him in a trade from Barry, and he was explosive. I think Rocky Thompson put a lot of structure in his game, and I think Chevy saw that, and he was really happy with his development. He wears his emotions on his sleeve, much like his dad did. I played with his dad in 96 with Colorado, and he has that emotion on his sleeve, which is good sometimes, but sometimes it has to be controlled. And his skill level is really good. He finds the net. He's big. He's strong. He gets to the net. He loves hockey. He's going to be a good player. He might need seasoning. Who knows? I don't know what they have in store for him, but he can make all the plays. He can skate. He can shoot. He can hit. He can fight. He checks all the boxes, but he's going to be a good pro. He's got a lot of intensity, and he plays for keeps. That's for sure.
Warren, you mentioned earlier the city of Windsor is going to be hosting the Memorial Cup, and, you know, it's London obviously won the Memorial Cup this past season, but what does it mean for your organization to host the Memorial Cup, and how hard is it for a team to end up getting it? Because I imagine most teams in the CHL want to host it.
Yeah, it is hard. You know, when we first bought the team in 06, we wanted to have it for the city. You know, we've had all the other events, the OHL All-Star Games, the Prospect Game, the Russia-Canada Game. We've had it all, but this is the one we wanted to bring here. As you know, it's a two-week affair. It brings the city, and it's huge money for the city. And that was our kind of goal, to bring it to the city and for everyone to see how much prestigious this is, and also bring money to the economy. But it is hard. We've bid three times for it over the last 10 years, and we were able to get it this time, and we're grateful that Dave Branch awarded it to us, that's for sure.
Warren Reichel is our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the general manager of the Windsor Spitfires. Now, Warren, I'm not sure if you're in tune to social media or in touch, seeing what's happening on Twitter, but when the Jets drafted Logan Stanley last week at the draft in Buffalo, there was a lot of consternation from those who sort of subscribe to the analytical side of the game, saying that he's not worthy of being a first-round pick. You know, having seen him up close and personal, obviously you think highly of him as a player. You know, what is his game like from sort of a possession point of view? And do the Windsor Spitfires, does your organization, factor that in when you look at a player, throughout the course of his development?
Well, 100%. I mean, we use analytics. I mean, you can't go straight analytics, as you know. It's a piece of the puzzle, just like stats were. People don't see, the analytic part when a kid hits a post three times or he's having problems at school. It's a little different at the junior level, but Logan Stanley is definitely worthy of it. You don't find guys like this. It's real simple. You don't find big guys like this that can play. You know, it might take them 3-4 years, who knows, but it's a good pick. They got Lonnie, they got him. It's a good base. These kids, obviously Lonnie's going to step right in, but he might take time, but it's going to be worth every minute of it. You just don't see guys like this. And playing, it's not fun to play against Logan Stanley's of the world. That factors in, too. Can't get to the net. You guys watch every playoff game. It's 2-1, 3-2, overtime, 1-0. So these are the kind of games that a guy like this can defend and move the puck out of his own zone. Analytics at the junior level are a little bit different for sure, because they're just kids, mm-hmm. They're teenagers. But there's no doubt that he warrants a first round pick, because obviously Chevy had to trade up to get him. Obviously someone was hot on him too. They must have got tipped off. They got who they wanted, and someone obviously was going to take them the next couple picks. So hats off to them for getting them, and Jets fans will be happy he's in the fold in a few years.
Warren Reichel's our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, discussing the Windsor Spitfires, discussing Jets draft pick Logan Stanley. You mentioned earlier, Warren, in discussing Brendan Lemieux, who of course is also a prospect for the Winnipeg Jets, that you had been speaking with Kevin Cheveldayoff about him. In the course of a season, when you have a player who's been drafted by an NHL team, how much back and forth conversation are you having between that organization, the NHL organization, and yourself, following the player's development in the course of the season?
Well, this year was it was pretty good. I mean, Chris Snell is one of your scouts. He's down here all the time. We had a lot of traffic because of the three first rounders. So Chevy was in quite a bit to watch Sergachev, Stanley, and Brown. And we always talked, and he always came in, had a coffee with Rocky before the game. So it was good. There's no real issue. We touch base. For a younger guy, it's different, but we always touch base about Brendan. And, there's guys that came in and checked on player development guys. Chevy was there, obviously, watching the first rounders. So there was a lot of positive stuff, and we're happy we could help the Winnipeg Jets out, that's for sure.
You know, Warren, you mentioned your time with the Colorado Avalanche winning the Stanley Cup. Back in 1996, earlier in the show, we actually had Stu Grimson on, Nashville Predators color analyst. And I know that you guys got into a few scraps. So I guess the question is, who really was the better fighter?
Oh, my God, not even close. He was. This guy was a killer, that's for sure, and big. And, he was very good at his profession. I was more of I was kind of the middleweight guy behind Marty McSorley in L.A. than obviously behind Ty Domi in Toronto, but he was big and feared, that's for sure. And he was a heck of a fighter, that's for sure. But I never backed down. That's one thing I didn't care, and that's why I was able to play a long time.
Warren, got a couple more questions for you before we let you go. We appreciate your giving us your time this morning on the Legal Curve Hockey Show. You last time the Spitfires won the championship, the Memorial Cup, was back in 08-09, and then they went back-to-back in 09-10, led by two guys named Taylor Hall and Adam Henrique. Those guys have been reunited in New Jersey with the trade of Hall for Adam Larson. You know, can you, you know, for our audience who, you know, may have not have seen back those Memorial Cup championships, just how dynamic were Taylor Hall and Adam Henrique together for the Spitfires, and what do you expect when you see those two guys together in New Jersey?
Well, these two kids, first of all, they're great kids. We went through a lot here. I don't know if you remember, we had a tough year. We had a death of our captain in 09, and obviously we carried that with us. And at the time, Henrique and Hall were 15 and 16, respectively, when that happened. So they brought the kids closer together, and now 10 years down the road, they're together. They know each other. They'll play hard for each other. Obviously, Taylor's a bit shocked. Henrique, he's in our arena right now working out in Windsor. So I saw him yesterday, but he's happy for a new start. I think he's a little bit bitter, to be honest with you, but these two guys reunited are good. And Junior, you know, is one thing. We split them up, so we had them on different lines. So, for example, if we played a team, it was hard for, you know, that team to get their 1-2 defenseman out. They can't put them out back-to-back, obviously. So we were a deep team, and those two guys were great. They arguably both could have been Memorial Cup MVPs and OHL MVPs, but phenomenal kids, and they're going to do well in Jersey.
Warren, we'll let you go on this last question. Your son, Kirby Reichel, traded to the Toronto Maple Leafs this past week at the NHL draft. How excited are you going to be just a little bit down the road being able to see your son play, hopefully for the Leafs or even with the AHL's Toronto Marlies?
Well, it's exciting. I think he needed a fresh start, and he got it. And he had a couple of really good years of pro up and down from Columbus, and this is an opportunity with a rebuilding club. So it's a fresh start, and as you guys know, with the pressure of Toronto comes a lot of stress, but he's a young pro. He's able to handle it, and you know, he's got a big job to do when he gets to training camp, try to earn a spot.
If I'm not mistaken, Warren, your middle name is Stanley. Is that correct?
That is correct.
No wonder, of course, that you'd be high on a guy named Logan Stanley, Winnipeg Jets, first-round pick, of course, playing for you in Windsor with the Spitfires. Warren, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Really appreciate your time and your insight.
Cheers, guys. Have a good one.
You
thanks
too,
so
Warren.
Much, Warren.
Thanks very much. Bye. It's head to break. When we come back, we continue our look around the NHL and the various transactions made in free agency. Big thank you to Warren Reichel, the general manager of the OHL's Windsor Spitfires, for joining us. Of course, before we had him on, we had Dave Jamieson of our sister station in Edmonton, and prior to that, Michael Trakos of the National Post and Stu Grimson, Nashville Predators color analyst. In case you missed any of those interviews, in case you missed any of the show, it'll be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and of course, on our website, illegalcurve.com, where all your latest Winnipeg Jets news lives, breathes, etc.
An awesome interview,
yeah,
with Warren Reichel. When I was talking to him earlier in the day, he was really excited to come on, and he's really excited for both Logan Stanley and Brendan Lemieux. And sure, you can say, you know, he's biased, but he really thinks the Jets got a couple of really good players here, and I know that there are some fans that think Logan Stanley might not have as much of an upside, for example, as a guy like a Jacob Chychrun, for example, but needless to say, Logan Stanley is a very improved defenseman, but we're not going to know how good he is at the pro level for another 3 or 4 years, Drew. That's right. So that's why we'll continue to follow him in the OHL, and right, we'll see how he develops.
Well, that's
and everything
why
like
there's
that.
Nothing quite as silly as giving you grades on a draft. Let's say when the players take 3-4 years to develop, a lot of them, you know, it's a fun gimmick to do, but really you're sort of, you know, throwing darts. With the exception, for the most part, usually of the top two, top three picks, where you hope those guys are going to pan out to be bona fide superstars, as most Jets fans hope, of course, with Patrick Laine, been in town for about a week now, I guess. He was in town for Shifley's golf tournament.
Yes.
Won't be on the ice at development camp. That gets underway tomorrow at the Iceplex. He had some minor knee procedure after the World Hockey Championships.
Right, and also he's going to be playing for Finland at the World Cup.
Sure.
So I think that's a consideration. And by the way, the development camp is really just for the players to get acclimatized
with the organization,
with the organization and everything like that. So Patrick Laine, I realize fans want to see him play, but I mean, that's not anything to be worried about.
Fans will have to settle for watching Kyle Connor and Jack Roslovic and players like that who are going to take the ice at MTS Iceplex. It's always, I mean, school's over, so it's right beginning of July now, school's finished. Always see huge crowds at the Iceplex for...
Logan Stanley as well.
Logan Stanley should be there too.
Yep.
Let's continue looking around the Pacific Division, some of the signings. Let's go to Vancouver. Louis Eriksson gets 6 years and $36 million, $6 million per season on a salary cap hit for the Canucks. Your thoughts on Louis Eriksson with the Vancouver Canucks? What are the Canucks? Are they rebuilding? Are they on an upward trend? Because I don't see it, so I'm not sure if I totally understand why you're throwing big money at a guy like Louis Eriksson right now.
No, Drew, the Canucks aren't rebuilding. When you signed Louis Eriksson to a six-year contract and you have the Sedins still on your team, you're not rebuilding. Well, that's a different question, right?
Yeah.
I don't think Jim Benning and Trevor Linden think they're rebuilding. I think they want to win now and they want to make the playoffs now. Now, whether or not that's going to happen when you have the Anaheim Ducks, the Los Angeles Kings, the San Jose Sharks in your division, I think the Calgary Flames improved quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if they're a serious playoff contender this year, especially solidifying the goaltending position with Brian Elliott. So
we'll talk about next.
I like the signing, Drew, because Louis Eriksson gives them a dynamic offensive top six winger at the NHL level. He was excellent for the Boston Bruins last year. Several other teams were after Louis Eriksson. So I like the trade for the Vancouver Canucks, but I don't know if Louis Eriksson alone makes the Vancouver Canucks better. Getting Eric Gudbranson makes them better on defense, but that defense just isn't as good as it once was. Like guys like Chris Tanev, Alex Edler, still really good defensemen, but this team, I think, is still a bit of a middling team. And I know that a lot of these young players, like Bo Horvat and Jake Virtanen, these are good young players, but how quickly are they going to become top offensive players in the NHL?
If they become that, because there's a lot of question about a guy like Virtanen, if he's ever going to turn into
Virtanen. Virtanen's a good player. I think he's going to turn into a really good forward, but I don't know if all these young players, Sven Berchi is another guy, I don't know if they have enough secondary scoring there after the Sedins and Eriksson.
You mentioned the Calgary Flames. They went out and solved their goaltending problem by acquiring Brian Elliott from the St. Louis Blues in exchange for a second round pick and a 2018 third round pick. They signed backup goaltender Chad Johnson to a one-year contract, $1.7 million, and they dip into free agency. They got Troy Brouwer under contract, 4 years, $18 million, average annual value of $4.5 million per season. We know they needed a goaltender. Brian Elliott, solves that problem for the most part, I would suggest. Your thoughts on both the Elliott move and the Troy Brouwer signing?
I really like both of them. And it seems like I like every single move if people are listening to the
entire
show.
I thought you've actually been more critical than normal today in some extent.
Yeah, I don't like all the moves. I didn't like the Radulov signing. I didn't like the Vanek signing. There were some signings I didn't like. But when you talk about Troy Brouwer specifically first, Drew, you're bringing in a guy to a team where he doesn't have to be a primary scorer. He doesn't have to play on the top line. Sean Monahan, Johnny Gaudreau, these are the top players. Sam Bennett. He comes in, he can play a complementary role. He gives them that veteran presence on the wing, a guy who can not only score, but he can play in specialty situations, physical guy like that. And we already talked about Brian Elliott. I mean, they needed a goaltender. Jonas Hiller, Kari Rammo were not coming back. They needed to sign a bona fide number one goaltender. Brian Elliott is not necessarily as good as, for example, Mika Kiprusov, an excellent goaltender,
but I still think he's an upgrade,
that defense is still very good. I mean,
it's a small price to pay for a guy who can certainly get you into the playoffs
with
that defense in front of him. I think the Calgary Flames should be back to being, if not a playoff team, certainly on the cusp of the playoffs this year. That's it for this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Apologies to all the teams we didn't get to. Good thing we'll be back next Saturday to do it all again and continue to recap the free agency moves. A big thank you to our guests, Michael Trakos, Stu Grimson, Dave Jameson, and Warren Reichel. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes, tsn1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Keener Jerseys, and the Bell Acres and Clear Lake Golf Courses. For producer Rory, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Toronto Blue Jays baseball here on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, brought to you by Royal Sports, the city's number one hockey shop, plus so much more.